Happy Tuesday, everybody. It's March 26, 2024. It is time to slowly roll. I'm Jesse Caulfield, ready for the Yaku Report. That over there, local broadcaster Dominic Lorenzano. And we're going to slowly roll this week. Back on Tuesday, we also took a week off because, yeah, just scheduling and all that stuff. But we're back. And, I mean, not a huge amount of happened.
No.
NFL is in the off season. MLB hasn't quite started yet, although
it's starting in what, two, three days?
Well, actually, it did start. There has been games, yes. But the drama has started with Shohei Ohtani and his best friend ever having a falling out. We'll go into that without spoiling what it is. They had a falling out. Obviously, you know, we did the American League stuff 2 weeks ago, so we'll do the NL stuff this week with division winners and stuff with that. Also, there's been a couple NFL rule changes that happened in the past 24, 48 hours. Some of them are kind of silly to me. And we're going to talk about that. Also, the Jets did a thing. And we haven't been here for 2 weeks, so we'll talk about that.
Yes.
And you know, March Madness, all this good stuff. But, Dom, you're going to start with some football.
Yes.
Or some football adjacent.
Yeah, football adjacent. So, anyway, I like the segue. So, the dynasty is pretty much out. I'm right. It's all over now. And there has been quite a lot of backlash. Now, again, things sometimes hit the local level that don't hit the national level. But I'm still surprised so much of this is not hitting the national level. And I understand, you know, there's some people talking about, well, you know, whoever gives access to the documentary, of course it's going to be a pro them, anti whatever else documentary. And Bill was never going to give access to people like that. So clearly it's going to be the Kraft. And while that is true, the Jordan documentary still pointed out negative things about Jordan. The Jordan documentary still had teammates that said some not nice things, pointed out the gambling, pointed out the rather harshness to his teammates and stuff in practice, and how other people in the league didn't always like him, the SI article, everything else. This has been, I think, a complete hit job by the Krafts, or maybe just Jonathan, I don't know, on Bill Belichick. And let me read some reactions. There have been multiple players that have come out with quotes regarding the dynasty and how misleading the documentary ended up being, Devin McCourty being one of them. Everything we all gave to 20 years encompassed. They only hit on anything negative. I could have left two times. I signed back, and there are reasons why. Rodney Harrison signed off even more. I stopped watching. They didn't tell the actual stories. I interviewed for 5 to 6 hours, and all they had me say was, F them all. I just don't think he got enough credit. 5 to 6 hours, and Rodney Harrison goes, the only thing we put in there is F them all. Now this, I understand, there are egos involved. This is how dynasties die. People start fighting. Some people want credit. Some people want none. No one thinks that Bill is the nicest person in the world. But this has been a complete hit job by the Krafts. I think particularly Jonathan probably trying to blame the last couple of years solely on Bill and sort of start his own legacy since he's been waiting in the wings for so long. But whatever you want to say, the he said, she said, all the stories, this, that, whatever happened with Tom and Bill, I know four things to be true. Bill won them at minimum 2 of those Super Bowls single-handedly. Both Rams ones, stopping the greatest show on turf and then completely out-coaching and embarrassing Sean McVay in what was the highest scoring offense that nobody could stop that year. Remember they faced the Chiefs in they faced the Chiefs at one time and he out-dueled Patrick Mahomes all over Steve Spags' defense. No one could figure out how to stop it, and Bill shut it down for an entire game. And that was out without their offense putting any more pressure on the Rams either. Tom was completely stifled in that game by Wade Phillips and that Rams coaching staff. The second one I know to be true. Bill Belichick had a contingency plan in place with Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, was Jimmy G probably going to be a decade-long answer? Probably not. But at the end of the day, whatever you think of Jimmy G, he did win multiple playoff games and made a Super Bowl and led in the fourth quarter. There's no way that the train would have come off the tracks the way it did if they had handed it over to Jimmy G. It just would not have been this bad. The third thing I know to be true, And I don't understand why this report has just not really reached the national media at all. Bill did not want to draft Mac Jones. That's been reported on multiple times. And you know why I really believe it too, despite the fact that it's been reported on in the local media multiple times, who we already know doesn't like Bill, and yet it still made it out, is Bill is friends with Nick Saban. I'm sure they had long conversations. I also don't remember Nick Saban before that draft going on multiple interviews talking about how great Mac Jones is. Certainly wasn't on the Jim Harbaugh hype train that he is right now on J.J. McCarthy. So I think there's no question in my mind that that is completely true. And the fourth thing, not that it was all performance-based, we might never know the true story. But let's not act like the dynasty, and whenever people talk about this, it seems as if they want to talk about that Bill benched a Pro Bowl corner in Malcolm Butler. Malcolm Butler's performance in the previous playoff games was atrocious. He had been playing awful. The QBR when targeting him was over 100 in both of the playoff games. And yet, from the dynasty, from everything I've heard, it's as if people talk about as if he benched a Pro Bowl corner. Now, listen, Bill is strict. Bill has rules. They once cut a running back the next week after he scored 3 touchdowns. I'm not saying it was only performance-based that Malcolm sat. But let's not act like Malcolm was a Pro Bowl corner when Bill benched him in the Super Bowl. So those are 4 things I know to be true, and they all have Bill's fingerprints all over them. All right? For the good and the bad. This has been a complete hit job by the Crafts, and of course the local media is going to just slobber all over it and promote it. The national media, sometimes they're a little bit better on the Pats and Belichick, but they're not going to go deep diving to try to disprove a lot of the things in the documentary, because one, it's good publicity, airtime, it's a media done thing during the downtime, and second, the Pats haven't been all that interesting over the past 2 to 3 years. They're focusing on the draft and other things. They're not going to make a bunch of calls. They're just not. So, but this has been a complete hit job by the Crafts, in my opinion. I've never seen a documentary quite like this one.
I still think if, like, Bill just played Malcolm Butler for, like, 1 series on defense in that Super Bowl, we'll probably win.
We might have.
I'm
not saying that Malcolm probably didn't do something to piss Bill off also. But this idea, every time I hear people talk about this, it's as if he benched Darrell Revis. Like, he was not playing at a high level.
Mm. Yeah. No, I'm sure. But no one played at a high level on the defense in that Super Bowl.
No, I know.
So, you know.
The defense also wasn't that good, probably, at the end of the day. If you go back and look at the numbers and then look at the teams they had faced in the AFC.
I don't remember who they
were. The NFC was way better than the AFC that year, and it kind of seems like the Pats and Bill were able to make it off coaching. And then they went up against an elite.
Oh, they beat the Jaguars to get into the Super Bowl. That's what it was.
Yeah, Blake Bortles. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
The defense played well in that game.
But it was Blake Bortles.
So?
I'm just saying, like, it was probably an average defense that was inflated by the fact that AFC was kind of down.
Particularly
offensively.
Was that the year Stephon Gilmore won Defensive Player of the Year, or was it next year?
I think it was next year.
Okay. I don't remember what year it was.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a couple things from that. Mm-hmm. One, I have these Kraft quotes from this morning, or they're coming out this morning.
Robert, not Jonathan.
Yeah.
This is
the actual
Kraft. I'm just saying, right now, particularly after this documentary, I feel like it's very important to make the distinction.
Roberto. Yeah, Roberto Kraft. So he said, I really loved the first 3 episodes. And then he goes on to say, I felt bad that there was so much emphasis on more controversial and, let's say, challenging situations over the last 20 years. I wish they had focused more on Super Bowl wins, our 21-game win streak, and then et cetera. It's like, sure. And, you know, as we've talked about, as Robert Kraft is getting older, Jonathan just has to be getting more and more responsibility. But, like, who was more responsible for this documentary? I mean, this quote makes me think a little bit Kraft. You know, in the back of my head, I'm thinking, is he just trying to save his own ass? Oh,
Has he seen blowback?
Yeah, that didn't come off well. I'm going to take a step back.
In the media, it's come off well. To the former players, it has not come off well.
Well, that's the thing. The national media, they're not really coming out and defending Bill, but they're all kind of saying, they're like, wow, that didn't land well with the masses, including former players and people in the industry. Because NFL Films has come on said, like, we're distancing ourselves from this. This is a Kraft product. This is a Patriots product. We had little to do with this. And I will say, I guess, with the Rodney Harrison thing, what do you say? Like, he was there for 5-6 hours talking?
Yeah.
That's – listen, you're going to be there, and you're going to say a million things, and 90% of it's not going to make the final cut. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you 90% of what he said is useless and not interesting to put on camera in a documentary. Mm-hmm. How long is the documentary?
Well, it's – how many episodes was it? I think it was like
I'm sure an hour each.
Yeah.
And he spoke for 6 hours?
Yeah.
You get 10 minutes an episode at most if you're interesting and important enough.
Yeah.
Like, obviously 90% of that's going to be cut.
Yeah.
So I don't really care about that. Now, I'm sure, obviously, they cherry-picked. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is not...
But I've watched the other things. The only real thing I see from Rodney Harrison is the FML quote.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the Devin McCourty stuff come out and saying, like, yo, I said all this nice stuff, and none of that made it. Mm-hmm. But, like, I will say also, when you're making something, mm-hmm. there has to be a vibe. There has to be a theme, an overarching theme to the whole thing to make it all link. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you had to go one route or the other, let's look at how great this dynasty was. Let's look at all these amazing moments. Or let's look at all the bad stuff. And you had to pick one or the other. Too bad they're assholes and picked it. The latter, because that seems to be, again, we're blaming Jonathan for most of this, and I kind of agree with that, because Jonathan seems to be that guy, like, I want to make sure my name is in when it comes time. I want to make sure the Kraft name is the thing that people remember, not Bill, not
the
so
other
much
thing
Brady.
That it seems so obvious why you can point at Jonathan is nothing came out of this building until Robert started to step aside and Jonathan took over.
Sure. Yeah.
So who's the one who's been using the media?
There is also, like, you know, when things start to fall apart, people betray each other and stuff like that. That's now, true. I still think Robert seemed to do a great job, even for, like, when Brady was still here and it started to see the cracks and, like, all this stuff was coming out. The relationships aren't that great. I still think Robert seemed to do a good job of keeping most of it at house. It was all like, well, it's rumors. We can't say for sure. Who really knows? Stuff like that. And then, you know, Brady leaves. Again, more and more of Jonathan in the limelight, less of Robert. And, yeah, now more of this of – oh, Brady was the guy. We should never have parted from Brady. And, you know, all this crap about Bill, the drafts, and how he can't find receivers and build an offense, and he can't coach Mac up. Mm-hmm. That's why I think Jonathan, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And with this documentary, and you mentioned, here's the thing. I don't really think Jordan got nearly the much crap mm-hmm. as this. And you said, oh, they brought... With the
I said that. You didn't get nearly as much crap as this. My point of why this is a hit job. The other one was a documentary.
Okay. Well, even the stuff that they had, like, negative in The Last Dance, negative about Jordan, like the gambling stuff, they almost made it like, oh, yeah, like, that's not really responsible, but he's so cool for it.
Yeah.
Like, how much money he can just toss around like that. Yeah. They said, like, yeah, they mean, like, oh, like, gambling's not the best thing to do. But, like, man, he's got so much money. Who cares how much he gambles?
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, I know Scottie Pippen doesn't like Jordan, but Scottie Pippen just lost his mind.
Scottie's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Scottie's come across in the last couple of years as really bad. And not like, just from the documentary.
Also,
itself.
Jordan's son is, like, dating his ex-wife. So, like, there's some things there.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. But, I mean, but the other thing with Jordan, though, they talk plenty about how much of a tyrant he was at practice. They had some people say negative things. They talked about the SI article. They had the guy who wrote the SI article come on and talk about it, too.
Yeah, but that was still 99% like, look how awesome this was. Look how great of a time this was.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. I understand. Like,
but yeah. I'm pro that anyway. Because you know what ticks me off about the media the most? If you want to defend...
They exist.
No. They exist... to, you know, sometimes shine light on things, find out what's going on behind closed doors, and then some of that is going to look negative. My issue is they have this weird thing where for years I have to hear them defending losers, like James Harden and stuff, who cares about 50% of the time.
And Kirk Cousins, who doesn't win anything.
Yeah. I mean, at least I think Kirk tries, though.
I mean, Kirk's a nice guy.
I'm talking about these people who like a James Harden who sometimes is ambivalent to everything, despite the fact that he's making millions of dollars. And yet all I have to hear for years they were defending him.
Because he's a bad person.
It's weird. But because you win, like there's a sacrifice sometimes if you want to be at the top and you want to win a ton. You're going to have to be an a-hole sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to be pretty.
It's not that, like, I mean, obviously, like, there's this mindset of – people don't like winners. There's obviously the envy, jealousy, like, oh, we want what they have, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to tear the best down because everyone wants that spot. But, like, if you're winning and you're doing it badly, they love it. Mm. I'm like, I don't want to be a Travis Kelce hater, but I've been very critical of him and just, like, kind of who he is. Not the biggest team player, doesn't block, very arrogant, kind of a douchebag, all that stuff. The media, even before the Taylor Swift stuff, he could do no wrong.
Oh, I know.
Never a thing wrong, anywhere, anytime, no matter how much you whined and cried on the sidelines about things. Oh, who cares? Brady all the time got crap for it. Mm-hmm. Now, not as much as, say, like, a Mac Jones got crap for it, because eventually people were like, well, he's the best ever, I get it, but he still got crap for it. I mean, I guess I saw Travis Kelce get a little bit of crap for, like, pushing what's-his-face in the Super Bowl.
Brady got crap for it until he left New England. And then it became, well, he's gone. We hate Bill more than Tom. So we'll start giving Tom a pass and just go after Bill now.
Sure. But also, like, yeah, like, when Travis Kelce, like, pushed Reed in the Super Bowl, he got a little bit of crap. Mm-hmm. Within a day, everyone forgot.
Yeah.
He's back on everyone loves Travis Kelce again because he's kind of a douchebag and he wins. If James Harden won, he would get no crap whatsoever, and he'd be a national celebrity and praised everywhere and by everybody. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't quite win. Mm. But, like, he's still a douchebag. He's still a loser. He's still an asshole. So, like, the media's like, love this guy. That guy deserves a ring. KD gets no crap from the media whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. He really doesn't.
Kyrie Irving didn't actually get any media crap until he said something anti-Semitic.
Yes.
And then they're like, we have to say something.
Yeah. That's a great one. KD, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden are the Mount Rushmore of the phenomenon that I am talking about. If you want to undercut and call it journalism and all that because you want to find out what's really going on behind the scenes, that's fine with me. But can we do it unilaterally? Can we not just make excuses for the people who are losers and then do everything we can to try and discredit those who put winning above all else? By the way, guess what? As a fan, I want the people who play for the team, who coach the team, to be about winning above all else.
Yeah,
that's all that matters to me, the consumer, anyway.
Mm. I also say, like,
I want my team sitting there kumbaya in the locker room all the time. We just love each other. We'll never move off anyone because we're too loyal.
Bill loved when his players,
because we can't be mean.
Bill loved when his players fight it at like training camp and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I will say this also, I guess, defending the media. Mm-hmm. Controversy sells.
It does.
And so, you know, when they see things like that, and the idea is to not take a side also. They'll just report, this is what happened. Mm-hmm. We're not going to say if you should hate this man or dislike this man or anything like that. This is just what happened. Form your own opinion. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, this stuff sells. So I get them reporting on it. Like, I bet the first game Ja Morant played back this year mm-hmm. was probably their highest rated game. Mm-hmm. For like a while.
Probably.
Not even just because, oh, John Morant's back, star power, I'm going to watch, but because, like, he came back from a suspension where he's playing with firearms. Like, mm-hmm. that's suddenly just interesting. There's going to be no firearms on the court, but I want to watch this guy because mm-hmm. he played with one off the court. Yeah. I understand these things. I understand sensationalism and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But, like, it almost seems, and I guess this is the tinfoil hat, like, they want the bad people, the bad influences in the limelight and to be looking the coolest because they want kids to emulate that. And that seems maybe extreme. And, like, why would sports media care about that? I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's just like ABC at the top. And report on this. Mm-hmm. Why? Just do it.
I don't know. I think a lot of it is probably just envy. But anyway, we can move on.
And sensationalism.
But we can move on to rapid fire news, probably. But I will say this. The loudest one after a breakup is usually the one who is most in the wrong. And I'm sorry, right now the Crafts have been the loudest people.
In this three-way breakup?
Yes.
You know who was the quietest of the entire breakup, even quieter than Bill, was Brady.
He was pretty quiet about it.
His camp was, like, saying things, and every time he was like, shh, no, mm-hmm. we're not those people.
I mean, he did that Howard Stern interview after he left and went to the Bucks, and he still didn't even talk about Bill that much in it.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. He's like, I want to talk about the Bucks. And
then my personal life and just life in general is me as someone outside of just the sport.
Yeah,
too.
I don't want to talk about the Patriots and Bill and mm-hmm. them. Yeah. Unless it's like how great that was. And like, yeah. Well, just, oh, you know, 20 years, like, ah, oh, but you got to find new endeavors and all that stuff, whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. So I get that. As I look for something real quick to put in rapid fire news that I forgot to put in. It was like nothing happened in these past 2 weeks because we're talking about all of it. Mm-hmm. So I have like little to nothing for Rapid Fire News.
That's fine.
And I'm not 100% sure when the last show was, so this might, these stats might be slightly incorrect. But the Celtics, they went 6-1 since we were last here, mm-hmm. I believe. Maybe 7-1. Mm-hmm. And they lost. That one loss was last night mm-hmm. when they blew a 30-point lead to the Hawks. Mm. Were we going to talk Celtics today?
Nah, we're not going to.
Okay.
We have too much other stuff.
Well, then real quick, they went on that streak after I said like they lost to the Nuggets and like, oh, no.
Yeah.
You still can't win. And then they went on a streak kicking everyone's ass. And I was like, all right, maybe I was wrong. They just blew a 30-point lead to the Hawks. And I'm like, ah, there it is.
Yeah, I know.
There it is.
They continue to be bad in fourth quarters.
Yeah. But also, since we were last here, the Bruins, they went 3-1. And they play.
The Panthers.
They play the Florida Panthers tonight. And the other bit of news, which is all I could really find, is the Florida Panthers, since we were last here, went 1-1-1. So.
Tough.
Yeah. And I, if you're looking at the President's Trophy standings, there's 7 teams within 1 point. And thank God Vancouver lost last night. That was a big one. And all the other teams play today. Yep. Bruins and Panthers play each other. Rangers play the Flyers, so they're going to win. Mm-hmm. Hurricanes play. They all play.
Yeah.
They're all fucking playing. They're all effing playing. that's basically rapid fire news.
All right. Sounds good.
Nothing happened.
No.
At least nothing we're going to talk about.
I mean... No, plenty of things happen, but...
We're all going to talk about them.
Yeah, they're going to be talked about.
Yeah. Like, I could put what happened to Ohtani, but we're going to talk about
it. Including Kentucky losing
again. But we're going to talk about
it. In the first round.
I thought about putting maybe some March Madness upsets in here, mm-hmm. but I was like, I don't know.
There actually haven't been a ton of big upsets.
There was, like, that first day.
Yeah, there was the first day. Yeah, the second round, the round of 32, the favorites won almost every single game. And the only one they didn't was one that we were like, ah, that's a toss-up anyway.
You want to know something funny, though?
What?
I came, when I was making my little bracket, which I did scrambling last second this year, so it wasn't that great. Mm-hmm. I came so close to picking Oakland
okay.
in the first round. And I can't remember who beat Auburn, but I almost picked Auburn to lose
Yale.
In the first round. Yeah, I was so close to picking Yale. And there was one more I almost picked that was a big upset. I can't remember what it was. And I last second changed them. And I was like, I would have had all three of those giant upsets.
Ah, that would have been crazy. All right. With that, let's go on to the meat and potatoes of the show, which is baseball and the NL preview. Now, I will say the NL is a lot less interesting from a division predicting standpoint than the AL. Because the two of them, I feel like we all know. The Central in the National League is just as much of a who the hell knows, if not more so than the AL.
But at the same time, it's also a little bit of a who the hell cares, because it's not going to be one of them that wins.
Know, right? But anyway, let's start with the NL East. Come on.
The Phillies.
Shut up. the Phillies are a great team, a very good team that is still a plus 375 to win the division because the Braves are just that good. Yeah, I know, right? That's crazy. And I don't care. I don't think there's value on that. I think that's exactly what it should be.
Yeah, it's got to be the Braves. The
Phillies aren't deep enough. The Braves are winning this division. I think the Braves are going to finish with more wins than the Dodgers. I still think they're the best team in baseball. We'll get to that later on the bet stuff. But Braves win the division. I got Phillies in second, Marlins in third, Mets in fourth, and the Nationals in last. The Marlins won a lot of one-score games last year. Sandy Alcantara is going to be out for the year. I think they're not going to be very good this year.
The Marlins?
Yeah.
Really?
I don't. Mm.
Do they have? I mean, not that I'm going to sit here and be like, well, I mean, listen, good. Watch out for the Marlins.
Do they still have some bright spots and some things to be like optimistic about? I do think so. They have some young starters. Braxton Garrett looked pretty good. I know they got others. But, you know, are they going to score enough runs? No Alcantara. A lot of one run game wins last year. Like, I think this is probably about a 74 win team. Mm. So,
thoughts on the NL East? Well, I mean, you know, it's going to be the Braves.
Yeah.
I'm more just see like, how well will the Phillies do? Will they make it somewhat interesting into August?
Don't you think they're kind of due for some regression, though? I mean, they're getting older. Nola did not look as good last year. They didn't really add.
Yeah.
What did they add?
I thought they added something.
They might have added something. I don't remember any pitching, though, that they really added.
I thought they added another outfielder.
They might have. But even the position players, I mean, Harper continues to get banged up. Now, he's probably going to DH now, which is helpful. Though then it's like, well, Schwarber plays the outfield. That's a disaster. Rhys Hoskins is gone.
Yeah. He didn't play last year anyway.
No, I know. But he went to the Brewers.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is kind of a big deal for the Brewers. Now, I still don't think they're going to be that great. We'll get to that later. But, you know, I do think they have more of a fighting chance than I realize.
God, I hate this app.
What, the MLB app?
Yeah.
They changed it.
They did. They were like,
it's awful. It used to be so great.
It was, yeah.
It used to be so streamlined.
I made this joke when it first happened, but, like, they saw the NHL app. I'm like, we can do worse.
I know. It's so annoying.
I finally made it. I finally made it to their roster.
Yeah, I know. They kept Wheeler, obviously. They gave him that extension. They're still a good team. They're still very top-heavy, but I don't know.
Oh, they got Whit Merrifield. That was one. Oh, I mean, that's not huge, but then, yeah.
I mean, I like that. Diversifies the offense a little bit. But it's just, that's such an older...
That was their big move.
Yeah, it's such an older roster. Like, you know some of these guys are due for some regression.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, offensive-wise, still, I mean, it's not old. Like, Bryce Harper is only 31.
That's true.
Castellanos is, kind of the oldest. I mean, other than with Merrifield at this point, but, like, he's 32.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a good spring.
Yeah, I mean more with the pitching. Particularly Wheeler and Nola.
Okay.
Where it's like, especially Nola last year, you know, not that he was bad, but he didn't look quite as good.
Mm.
So I just feel like there's some concerning things here. Now, the rest of the division is bad. The Mets have waved the white flag like they should have. The Marlins aren't that good, and we all know that the Nationals
keep saying that.
Are a disaster.
But I have a little thing about the Marlins.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
So no, not right now.
Okay, but you tell me what the division's going to look like, up and down. Braves, obviously.
I think maybe the Nationals can finish ahead of the Mets.
Okay.
Because, like, they were on the up and up, at least at the end of last year.
There's a chance.
And, like, you know, I think they should progress. I don't think they're there yet. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, if you made the case to me that they finished third, Marlins finished fourth, or even fifth, I'd be like, I guess. There's the Marlins. Anything can happen. This is the Marlins, for God's sakes. Yeah. Anything can happen with them. But, yeah, kind of that. I'm going to Braves, Phillies, Marlins, Nationals, Mets.
Okay. I'll let you start with the NL Central. What do you think?
Good, because it's going to be the Cubs.
All right. I see it.
I know the Reds are on the up and up. Exciting young offense. That pitching staff is still so questionable.
I know.
Who the hell knows if Hunter Green's actually going to take that step? The Brewers, yeah, I know they got the bat with Bohm or whatever.
Reese
Hoskins. Yeah, uh-huh. Bohm stayed. Bohm's the one that stayed.
Yes.
Come on. He's coming off, was it a torn ACL?
Yeah.
Which I know, this is baseball. It's not like he's still, like, how is it going to affect his rushing game? But it's still, that's a major injury. He didn't play at all last year. There will be rust on his game, at least out of the gate. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. And they lost Corbin Burnes.
Yeah.
It's kind of, to me, between what are the Reds going to do and can the Cubs at least maintain some of the momentum they had last year. Because if they do, you know, this division is bad enough that that's good enough. Or at least it could be.
Okay.
You know, if you make the case that, like, well, the Brewers without Corbin Burnes, like, Corbin Burnes wasn't the biggest fan of being there anymore. Maybe he's getting a little bit of cancer in the locker room. It was his time to go anyway. Time to move on, that type of stuff. Okay, I get that. Mm-hmm. There's still a good pitching staff.
Is it? I'm looking at the pitching staff. It's Justin Steele, Kyle Hendrick.
They're one of the.
Then it's the Japanese guy, Imanga. Then Jameson Taillon. Like the back end of this, first off, we have no idea with Shota. Okay?
I guess.
No idea with that. Taillon looked done. Then it's like Assad, Jordan Wicks, or Drew Smiley. I don't know what they're doing there. Kyle Hendricks at times has been up and down over the last year and a half. Justin Steele, he's good. Can he really be as good as he was last year, though?
Well, that's the thing. I don't think he needs to be as good as his peak last year. Okay. He was a good, consistent pitcher, and just be that.
Okay. This offense, to me, is pretty, like, kind of mediocre. Like, I mean, they're going to have to hope Bellinger plays at that MVP caliber. Suzuki's a good top-of-the-lineup guy. It's like, well, Christopher Morel is a all-or-nothing guy. So is Patrick Wisdom. Nico Horner's good, but
here's the thing: all these lineups, other than maybe the Reds, are mediocre. And even the Reds, it's so young. Who knows what it would actually be?
I think the Cardinals lineup is still.
I do not at all.
I know you don't, but
those old farts.
Okay.
They're all the Cardinals have in that lineup really is Arenado, and old effing Goldie. All the other ones were inconsistent, and I don't really trust many of them.
What about?
I'm a fan of Lars Nootbaar, but mostly for name.
What about Jordan Walker, the top prospect?
They sent him down last year.
Yeah, and he came back up and hit better when they called him back up. Now okay. He's got another year under his belt.
Congrats. You might have a leadoff hitter.
Brendan Donovan.
Who's going to bat him in?
Brendan Donovan's pretty good.
No, he's not. He's not bad.
You know, maybe Dylan Carlson takes that step or Nolan Gorman does. Listen,
all right, you're Nolan Gorman's good.
I mean, listen, I don't have them winning the division. So you got the Cubs winning the division. Who do you have in second?
Reds.
Okay. Now tell me the next three.
Brewers.
Okay.
Cardinals, Pirates.
All right. Interesting.
Although O'Neill Cruz has me, and he's one man, but O'Neill Cruz has me hyped to watch some Pirates.
Listen, I want to see him, but he's another one that's like so up and down.
No, I know. But like he looks fantastic this spring, which I know means he's going to have a terrible, terrible year.
Yeah. All right. I have it Reds, Cardinals, Cubs, Brewers, Pirates. I just see more chances for the Reds to be on the higher end. I have no idea who's winning this division. I don't think anyone truly does. I just see the potential for more special with the Reds. I feel like the Cubs mostly just brought Bellinger back. I don't think they added much. I would have felt better about the Cardinals if they could have brought in one more bat and if Sonny Gray didn't already have an injury problem to start the season. But he does, and that's a massive blow to a rotation that was horrendous last year and needed Sonny Gray to be there for most of the year and in top form.
Here's the thing. I agree with you that the Reds have a more special team put together. Mm-hmm. The problem is it's kind of only on one side.
Yeah.
Offense. And two, they're all very young. And we saw Ellie De La Cruz. Saw the heights of Ellie De La Cruz and we saw the lows of Ellie De La Cruz.
Listen, they're going to go through wild swings because they're such a young team.
Yes.
But in this division, you can go through that because nobody's very good. The rotation is going to be Hunter Green, Graham Ashcraft. Ashcraft is a top prospect. Let's see if Frankie Montas can have a renaissance. Andrew Abbott, another top prospect. Then it's Brandon Williamson, Nick Lodeau, and Nick Martinez. We'll see which one of those three really emerges. But I see three guys with a chance to take that next step. Maybe Montas, as I said, has the renaissance. You have Alexi Diaz, at least to close out games. Lucas Smith, Buck Farmer at the back end of the bullpen. And then, obviously, they added Jameer Candelario for an experienced bat. I really like that addition a lot. Now, the outfield probably leaves a little bit more to be desired. You're going to have to help William Benson make that step. But on the infield, you got Ellie De La Cruz, Christian Encarnacion Strand, and Spencer Steer, all who had Strand not as great last year, but good prospect. Maybe he takes the step next year. Ellie De La Cruz, you expect to at least be more consistent. I just like them. I see the potential that they could turn the corner. And if they do and they get hot, their ceiling is just higher than everybody else in the divisions.
They're also down two bats to start the year.
True. I forgot about that. But again,
steroids and
you can go through this kind of stuff in that division to a certain extent.
What's the thing, though? I hear what you're saying because they're all mediocre and we expect a lot of dips and all this stuff. Losing streaks come followed by winning streaks. Mm-hmm. The reason I picked the Cubs is because I think they might be that one consistent team.
I'll get you.
Good? Maybe not ever.
Okay.
But if they're consistent with decent, while other teams are hitting tremendous lows and even tremendous highs, I think the consistency will prevail.
Okay. The problem with that is if Cody Bellinger goes back to his inconsistent form, they're in a lot of trouble.
Cody's very consistent. It's just an entire year of great or an entire year of bad.
Well, what if he's an entire year of bad?
I don't know.
They do not have the bats to overcome that. Whereas at least if somebody has a bad year with the Reds, I think offensively, they can overcome that.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
So that's how I see it. Now, the Brewers, I looked at the Brewers. I find them a little bit more interesting than I realized. I still have them finishing fourth. But the addition of Rhys Hoskins, if they have a kid that I don't really realize in the pitching staff that at least can do a better job of replacing some of what Corbin Burns, what they lost with that, they could be right back in this mix as well. So, yeah.
And you won't let the Cardinals die.
I won't let the Cardinals die. I will say this, though. Of the four teams I mentioned, who are all I could potentially see competing and winning the division. The lowest floor of all of them is the Cardinals. The Cardinals could be another absolute disaster.
Mm.
I just don't think they will be.
All right.
But, yeah. So, you got the Cubs. And then who'd you have? Do you have the Reds in second, you said, right?
Cubs, Reds, Brewers.
And Cardinals.
Cardinals.
Oh, cool. Go, cool. Yeah.
O'Neill Cruz.
The one I'm just really going to argue the most about with you is just the Cubs on that one. Because I just don't see it. They didn't add enough. They just kind of brought back what they had last year.
Well, and I don't... They added a lot of things, but they never made any big splashes.
True.
You know, they're like, all right, we'll get a back-end pitcher, some bullpen help, some bench help.
I'm just saying, when they collapse the way they did at the end of the year, it felt like they needed to do a little bit more, something a little bit more substantial.
Maybe they felt the collapse was like, well, if we tape up some things, fill some cracks, we don't have to put some of the big load on like Steele's arm or Cody Bellinger's bat, and we can get, you know, a little more length out of them for the season, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's how they saw it.
No, I get you. All right, let's go to the NL West.
Well,
the Dodgers are done. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's gonna be
Yamamoto
done.
Clearly can't pitch in the bigs.
Padres put up 15 on that team.
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani is going to be kicked out of baseball for gambling.
Yeah, this is a 500 team, clearly.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, so, you know, the Dodgers are going to not be very good. I'm just kidding. The Dodgers are winning this division. Now, I do think they're getting overhyped, though, still. Because they still have pitching problems. They still have problems staying healthy in the starting rotation. Ohtani doesn't get to start and pitch until next year. I mean, if Yamamoto goes through some tough times, at least... Like, I think Yamamoto's going to be good. But if you told me he stunk for the first 2 months as he adjusts to everything, that wouldn't shock me either. So I do think, I mean, what's the Vegas win total? Like 103.5, 104? I don't think they're going to be quite that much of a juggernaut. But they're way deeper than everybody in this division. So they're going to win the division, and they'll end up winning the division by a decent amount. I got Dodgers, Diamondbacks, Padres, Giants, Rockies.
Padres
I do want
to the Giants.
What?
Padres ahead of the Giants?
I do have the Padres. Okay. I mean, with the adding Dylan Cease, you still look at it. I'm sorry. They're not great, but there's still a lot of special there. I mean, they got the bats. The Giants are still old. I don't know. I don't think they're going to score enough runs. They're another one. I don't think they're going to score enough runs. But
they brought Pablo Sandoval back.
Did they really?
I think he's just on a minor league deal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not like, you know.
You know, I kind of forgot about some of the additions, by the way, the Diamondbacks made. Now, obviously, everyone knows that they brought in Eduardo Rodriguez. But they brought in Randall Grichuk for another power right-handed bat. And what was the other one? Well, Eugenio Suarez. I thought they brought in the middle infielder, too. I'm just not seeing it. Oh, no, it was another outfield bat. Jock Peterson. So, I think they have... substantially helped with the depth of their team and with the experience of, like, sometimes the offense too last year for Arizona could go through some highs and lows because it's so young. They brought in some experience, some guys they can play matchups with, so I think that helps them a lot. Eduardo Rodriguez, of course. Brandon Paffett showed like he was making adjustments to the MLB near the end of the year after he was so awful to start the season. The back end of the bullpen is still Miguel Castro and the closer that they got from Seattle, Paul Sewald. So I think they've done substantially a lot.
Wait, didn't something happen to Sewald last night?
Did something happen to Sewald last night?
I thought I saw his name somewhere.
Oh, crap.
Let me look that up.
Yeah, take a look for me. Obviously, then there's the young talent that you always expect could be taking the next step. They got Jordan Lawler. He's a highly regarded middle infielder. They also have Blaze Alexander. Same story. Highly regarded middle infielder. We'll see which one. Ends up winning the job, or at least breaking camp and then taking over the job, probably at some point for Geraldo Perdomo.
Yes, Sewald's he's going to miss the first couple weeks with an oblique strain.
They'll be okay.
Yeah.
They'll be okay.
Yeah, maybe April they'll blow some saves in April. But
yeah, I definitely think this team is being undervalued. I think the additions they made really help a lot. I know Suarez was bad in Seattle last year, but that was a horrible park for him. Like, Arizona's a way better park for the kind of player Eugenio Suarez is. Plus, there's not the same kind of pressure on him. They can probably bat him sixth. Whereas Seattle was like, hey, we got everything else around. We're just desperate for some offense. Like, be the guy. 35 home runs, please. We need it so bad. All we do is win games 2-1.
I mean, to be honest, the only thing I really have to disagree with here is the Giants are going to finish ahead of the Padres.
Okay.
The Giants will finish third.
Why?
I mean, I guess they're right. They are kind of old. But there's a lot of names here. I mean, your rotation is going to be Blake Snell, Alex Cobb, Logan Webb.
I forgot they added.
That's a good.
No, that is a very good rotation.
I mean, we understand, like, you know, Blake Snell can also hit.
My mind, actually.
Blake Snell can also hit those lows. And especially, like, it seems to be when he goes to a new place, like, he had trouble adjusting to California and San Diego first.
Yeah.
Maybe being West Coast, he won't need to be as much of an adjustment, but maybe they will. Just new team. Blake Snell seems to be kind of that guy. But, like, they added Soler. They added, you know, another.
The problem with Soler is the ballpark.
Well, that's the thing. He is power. I understand it'll offset a little bit. I expect his numbers to drop. But, like, I'm sure they brought him in for, like, to up those power numbers. That has to be why you called him. They brought in Jung Hoo Lee, another, I think it was Japanese. The guy was, you know, kind of high. But, like, they made a decent amount. Matt Chapman's another one. I know he's old and over the hill, but, like, he can have some power. They made moves here. And I think that's enough to push him to third place.
Okay.
Like, I'm not going to argue anything really better than that.
No, you probably
there was a couple years ago where, like, they had, what, they won 106 games randomly.
No. I'll concede to you. I think you might have just changed my mind.
And, like, maybe you could even make a case that this will be one of those 9 wild card teams because there's way too many wild card teams now.
Yeah.
I could see that, 100%.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they'll be third.
All right, cool.
Probably.
So we got Braves and Phillies in the Central. We disagree. You have the Cubs and the Reds. I have Reds Cardinals with the Cubs finishing third. And in the West, I'm pretty sure you have Arizona second too, right?
Yeah. No, literally the only thing I kind of disagreed was Giants ahead of Padres.
Okay. And you have the Giants maybe
competing for a while.
Being able to grab that other wild card spot, which I think is well within range.
Because five teams make
it. Everyone in the Central is going to suck. The NL East is the Braves and Phillies, and everybody else in that division probably is not going to be that great. Whereas maybe if the Padres bottom out and the Rockies are going to be one of the three worst teams in baseball, the Giants can beat up on some guys to get some W's. So,
yeah,
I think that's totally legitimate. All right, with that, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll finish our National League preview with storylines and a few NL bets to give out. And then we will be moving on to some other topics. Stick with us, guys. And we are back here at Slow Your Roll, continuing with our NL preview before we move on to everything else. National League storylines. What are we looking forward to this year in the National League? I will start this one out. I'm going to be boring because both of mine are going to come from the NL Central. The first one is the Cardinals because, as I told you, I have them finishing second, but I also see them having the lowest floor of everyone in this division except for Pittsburgh. I'm interested to see just which one it's going to be because it's a Jekyll and Hyde act like nothing else, I think, in the National League. And it is a crossroads then. If they're bad, then it's like we're seeing the end of some great careers potentially between Goldschmidt and Arenado. And then it becomes, for this historically winning franchise, where do they go from there? Probably got to tear it down. Mm. So I'm very interested. Last hurrah potentially for some guys, or it could be, you know, the fade to black for some ones as well. So I'm interested to see just which one it could be because I don't know if there's any teams in baseball that could be quite as bad or as good as this Cardinal team could be.
All right. I have, I guess, it's kind of similar mm-hmm. in just the fact, like, you know, I just want to see what is this team going to do this year. Mm-hmm. That's the Marlins.
Okay.
I find them fascinating. I have for a long time. Mm-hmm. And
I have too.
With recent situation, you know, no Sandy this year. That kind of sucks. Oh, no. But we have the return of Fat Sixto Sanchez for the first time in, like, 4 years.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So I'm curious about him. And just, you know, what is this team actually going to do? I know you say, like, oh, they could be bad. And they could be. But this is the Marlins. They could be great. They could randomly make a playoffs and just go for a World Series run. And it always seems to be good or bad. They just have... People don't really talk about it as much because they are such a small franchise. And I still consider them, I mean, they're not really at this point. I still consider them a young franchise because in the grand scheme of things, they kind of are. There's so many just old teams. But, like, What a strange history they've had to this point. And it's just, again, every year they seem to make it more fascinating, whether it be on the field, in the locker room, or in the front office with, you know, Derek Jeter and the last GM they had. I can't remember her name. She just left. But, like, yeah, they are an interesting bunch they have in Miami. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested to watch how it goes. It doesn't have to be good. I don't care if it's good or bad. I'm not rooting any which way, mm-hmm, as long as it continues to be Miami Marlins entertainment.
I didn't know Sixto Sanchez was coming back, though. That's very interesting.
Yeah, he's fat.
I do root. I mean, you can be fat as a pitcher. Who cares?
Yeah. Maybe what's his name on the Phillies just said? He said, I'm an effing fat boy. Said it live on air.
Oh, who was that?
Alvarado?
Could have been, yeah. Could have been.
Yeah.
That's funny. But anyway, I would love to see him come back to form because he was so electric when he made his debut. I felt so bad.
Yeah.
I felt so bad for him.
And then, you know, Miami Marlins and them pitchers. I was talking to Nick about this. There's something about Florida, mm-hmm, and just developing good pitchers.
Yeah.
And if it's the Rays, you got to be a white pitcher. And if it's Miami Marlins, you got to be Hispanic.
Yes.
And it will work.
No matter what.
Yeah, you will just pitch well, mm-hmm, in Florida.
Yeah, seriously. For my second storyline I'm looking forward to, it's the Reds. Because I think they could be, in a lot of ways, the most entertaining team to watch in baseball. It's going to be craziness. Even when they're winning games a lot of the time, I guarantee it's going to be like 9-8 sometimes as well. Eloy De La Cruz could strike out four times and look terrible and also launch one 575 feet. I could see him totally doing something stupid on the base pass and getting himself thrown out in a crazy situation. And you're like, wow, what the hell were they thinking? Hunter Green throws 101, but he'll give up three bombs a game. You, mm-hmm, just have to hope that they're solo shots.
Well,
going to be an entertaining watch.
Actually,
I'm looking forward to it.
They were one of the more entertaining teams.
Oh, yeah.
Down the stretch to watch.
Yeah.
Like those, that series against the Braves,
mm-hmm,
where like every game ended 10-9,
mm-hmm,
and it was constantly back and forth.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that was very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish you didn't pick that storyline, though.
Because that's what you were going to do?
Well, I'm not doing the Reds. I'm doing one man on the Reds.
Okay.
And that's Jonathan India.
Okay.
Because, you know, there's a strong possibility he doesn't even end the year, mm-hmm, on the Reds. He is their locker room guy. He is their huge leader. They love him. Both fans and players. He is their veteran presence, even though he's not even that old. But also, he had a really fun, good season last year. He was really fun to watch. And I'm just curious of where his season is going to be. How much is it going to be on the Reds? Will he be as good as he was last year with the Reds? And where is he going to end his season? Because I don't think it'll be Cincinnati.
Yeah. No, I get you. All right. That has been it for the storylines. Let me hand out some NL bets real quick. Not as many as the American League. There's just, like we said, two of the divisions we feel are pretty wrapped up. There's not much you can do about it. So anyway, but for my first National League bet, I do see value here. Pretty obvious. Talked about it a bunch of times. The Reds plus 350 to win the Central. Again, I think they have the highest ceiling of all the teams. Does it mean they're going to win it? I don't know. But when I see the Cardinals and the Cubs as kind of equal, or at least close to it, and I mean, clearly so does Vegas. Both are in like the plus 190. Plus 205. There's just not a ton of value there. It can be plus 350 on a team with the most young players, which means that it could be the team that ends up taking the big step and being really good. And again, the team with the highest ceiling. I like the Reds at plus 350. Next one, the Arizona Diamondbacks, 84.5 win total. I will take the over. I know the Giants have probably improved. The Padres probably still won't hit rock bottom, and everybody thinks the Dodgers are the greatest thing ever. Well, I think the Dodgers still will have problems maintaining the starting rotation being healthy. And Arizona had some real additions. I know people think that they overachieved last year. They won too many one-run games. But they added Eduardo Rodriguez. You now have a top of rotation that's Eduardo Rodriguez, Merrill Kelly, and Zach Gallen. That's a pretty legit top of the rotation. They add bats to add length to the lineup. I think Eugenio Suarez will have a much better season in Arizona than he did in a historically pitchers-friendly park in Seattle. Add Jock Peterson, an experienced power left-handed bat. They kept Lourdes Gurriel as well. There's some more young kids, whether it be Blaze Alexander or Jordan Lawler. Maybe one of those two takes a big step and helps this lineup a lot. I like the Arizona Diamondbacks over the 84.5. They'll have one of the worst teams in baseball in the Rockies in their division to beat the hell out of all the time, too. That's always helpful when we talk about win totals. And the last one. For the first year in the last 2 years that they have not been the odds-on favorite to win the World Series. Now, they're just second, but still. The Atlanta Braves, plus 450 to win the World Series. Take it, take it, take it. When you get this many shots at the apple and you're this talented, eventually you usually break through unless you're the Los Angeles Dodgers because they're just so analytically driven. The Braves are not. The Braves use analytics, but they're about baseball too. The starting rotation is ridiculous, the amount of length that it has, the amount of depth that they have. The offense is ridiculous. Acuna, Albies, Austin Riley has put it together now. Matt Olson has looked really good in that ballpark. The bullpen sometimes leaves some things to be desired, but we all know bullpens can be up and down. And it's one of the easier things to add during the season. The big thing is you got a stud rotation guy in Spencer Strider, who is young. They add Chris Sale. I love that addition. What?
Is it Sale?
I love that addition. They just have so much length that they can survive multiple injuries in the rotation for a lot amount of time. And they're just going to score so many runs on teams. So now, not being the favorite, with all of the focus on the Dodgers, too, I feel like there's a little bit less pressure on Atlanta than there has been the last couple of seasons. So plus 450 to win the World Series. I like it. Take it. This is the year of the Braves. Break back through, I think, and win the whole thing. So that has been my bets for the National League. I don't know if you want to say anything, but
I'm dying over here. I choked on water in the middle of that. I'm trying to recover.
I get you. All right, we can move on to the Ohtani gambling story. Now, I don't know how much trouble he's going to be in. I do want to hit on
none.
I do want to hit on a few quick things. Everyone who assumes that he has to have been involved doesn't realize how much of a different lifestyle these people live. Do you know how many people, like when you're a superstar, millions and billions of dollars athlete, you have people managing so many things for you. One, because you can't go out in public a ton because you're going to get mobbed all the time. And two, because your physical health and working on your body and working out is just an everyday job. And also a sport like baseball too, right? Where, like, I'm not saying it's harder than other sports because it's not physically. But, like, during the season, the baseball is the longest season, and you play every single day. And you're traveling for half of them, too. Like, every week. Or half the weeks you're traveling somewhere. So, like, you don't do anything else during the season. And it's, what, 6 months of the year? 7 months of the year? What is it? So, you start spring training in February. So, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, and then maybe October. So, that's, like, the majority of the year. You are traveling every other week and you're playing a sport every single day. Like, they don't have time for much else. So they have guys who just handle their bank accounts. There's a chance Ohtani looks at his bank, like barely ever looks at his bank account. You have people handling your money. You have people who shop for you. You have people who set appointments for you. Like, they have an entire staff to handle day-to-day life. So this
team does some of that stuff too.
What?
I bet the team does some of that stuff too for them.
That too.
Doctors and
so this dentists. Idea though, like, there's no way the money's coming out of his account. How else could it be unless Shohei's doing it himself? It's like, because they have other people who run their money in their accounts because they just don't have time. The other thing too is the other people are like, well, even if that's the case, how can you not notice $4.5 million?
He just got married.
That too. But also, I was going to say,
of course, there's millions of dollars missing. He just got married.
I forgot about that. But anyway, the other thing, though, is money's relative, guys. To 99.9% of the world, that's a lot of money. To Ohtani, it's not as much as you think with the amount of money he gets paid by the Angels, with the contract he just signed. And he makes so much money overseas in Asia that it's hard to quantify in America. So it is crazy like that. There's a chance, again, everyone's like, $4.5 million. He didn't take it out all at once.
Yeah.
This has been going on probably for a while.
Actually, you take out that all at once, your bank's going to call you.
Yeah,
and be like, why are you taking this out? I don't take that out.
Yeah. The idea that doesn't add up. I mean, again, we're talking about money being relative. If I'm saying $4.5 million isn't a ton to someone like Shohei, $20,000, $30,000 really isn't much to Shohei, and that's maybe what the guy was taking out every, like, a little bit at a time. You know what I mean? But eventually that adds up.
Yeah.
But when I'm taking out 30, 40, 50 grand of an account that has at times in it $50 million, maybe. That's not a ton of money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, this was probably going on for years on end.
Yeah. This is also not the first one of these stories we've heard. Mm-hmm. In baseball, I think so. But, yeah. Like, I've heard of these stories like this, of, like, celebrities that, like, have their brother run their finances. Come to find out, oh, my brother was stealing money from me. Yeah, just a manager. Because when you deal with that much money, the first thing they tell you is you need a financial advisor, a financial planner. Mm-hmm. And so you're immediately just going to trust someone with your money. And sure, you can probably trust a financial advisor. Mm-hmm. But when you're a guy like Ohtani, and you are just so famous, and you have constantly people around you trying to get in business with you, just be friends with you because, like, well, I'm friends with Ohtani. That'll look good with on me, right? Mm-hmm. You have just all these people around you constantly trying to get in with you, all this stuff. And when you're that rich, money's coming in and out so fast. His bills, I'm sure, are more than I pay in a year for anything.
Not only is money coming in and out a lot, it's coming in from so many different places when you're Shohei. Because he's making money in so many different countries.
Sure.
Yeah.
But then also, yeah, when you pay your bills, like, yeah, I'm sure his bills are extravagant. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right, I have to pay $1 million for this, but okay, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And like, our money's lower than I thought. I just paid that $1 million. That's got to be it. It's got to be it, right? Yeah. Stuff like that, day to day. Because, yeah, that is boatloads of money. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious as how his translator, though, mm-hmm. got access to the account. Mm-hmm. I wonder was... Because I don't know the relationship necessarily between them. Who paid Ipe, I think that's how you pronounce it, his translator. Was it, because it always, you know, usually the teams will handle that stuff. Mm-hmm. These are our translators. He will work with you with the
but
media
the thing
stuff
with
like that.
Ipe is that he was more always, than a translator.
He was Shohei Ohtani's guy.
Yeah.
So was Shohei Ohtani personally paying him, this is my translator, he will, or is it, this is my translator, you hire me, you hire him. Mm-hmm. But I kind of think Ohtani was personally paying him. This is my assistant. This is my translator. Don't have to worry about it. I will pay him.
Mm-hmm. Could be. It could be. But I also know that Ipe was more than just the translator.
Oh, they were close. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He was doing other stuff for Shohei. In his camp as well. So,
including handle his gambling.
Listen, allegedly.
I also just like nothing about Ohtani says a gambler to me.
Yeah.
I could be shocked, mm-hmm. obviously.
But here's the other thing, too. Even if he was, here's the other thing. You got to – I'm not saying give a pass, but there's a difference with understanding of the rules and this kind of thing when you grow up in America your entire life and in the sport. He's from a different country. The idea that he's just going to get every – he's going to know every single rule and remember it, every social idiosyncrasy, everything about that, that's kind of ridiculous. He still spends a lot of time in Japan, too.
Yeah.
Like, he still needs a translator. So
yeah.
He clearly doesn't know the idea. Also, the other thing is that can be confusing is you have different rules, too, when you go state to state. So maybe he doesn't even realize that, like, is it MLB's law or is it the state that I'm playing in law? Or that's the other. Even if he is gambling, which I kind of don't think he is. But even if he was, there is the sense of, like, the understanding of the rules and expectations are not the same. And how could they be the same?
Yeah. Well, it's also, I mean, culturally.
Yeah.
I don't think Asia cares about betting all that much.
No.
I don't seem to.
No.
At least, yeah, obviously, you know, I'm sure there is some there and all this stuff like that. But, like, I think they have casinos.
Yeah, they do.
But, like, sports betting?
See a lot of Asians at casinos, too.
Oh, yeah, but, like, sports betting? And like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they do have a huge culture around it. Maybe. But like I don't think they do, and I'm pretty sure they don't. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm saying that as his Japanese translator had a huge gambling problem. But in general, doesn't seem to be the case. And so for Ohtani, I'm going to bet, yeah, I don't really think. Let's imagine, like, I don't know, with baseball, yeah, there's so much working and time where you, especially as a dual player, mm-hmm. pitching, hitting, like, it's got to consume every moment of your life. Mm-hmm. I don't even know where he found that wife.
Yeah.
When is he going to have time to be like, you know what? Put some bets on some basketball or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think he cares.
I was really thinking of this parlay, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's going to hit. I just don't see it.
Like, football players, they have a problem in the NBA and the NFL. They have a lot more free time.
Oh, yeah.
Even in between just games.
Way more.
So, like.
The NBA has has games that day and they have free time because they don't even care. Or they just decide, hey, bro, I'm not playing today for no reason.
Not to mention the culture around gambling in football and basketball is so much larger than in baseball. Mm-hmm. Those football players are – they can't avoid it being talked about around them. Yeah. Anything about the game of football is bet on at this point. Mm-hmm. Anytime any analyst is, like, given, they're like – and, like, what's the odds of this? And, like, oh, should we put money on this? It's like, when did this become that?
No, I know.
But, like, baseball, it's just not so much. But there is all this to the question. If he did, what do you do if you're the MLB?
I don't know.
You'll lose a lot of money if he doesn't play this year.
I know. It would be such a disaster for the league. It's like, wow.
Do you, if you can, mm-hmm. sweep that under the rug and be like, Shohei, you can't do this.
Oh, I know. It would be wild. But yeah, I mean, that's my thoughts on that. I kind of just don't see it. I kind of don't think he was. I think when people talk about this, especially in the everyday life, they just don't understand the differences in lifestyles of these people between how little that money actually is to that man, Shohei, and how much they don't handle their day-to-day affairs.
Have you heard anything wrong about Shohei Ohtani?
No.
He's Jesus. He's Japanese Jesus.
Japanese Jesus.
And like... I'm not trying to be mean or anything with it. There is a certain breed or personality that comes with sports betting. Mm-hmm. Usually they're, again, not in a negative way. Like, you know, they're usually maybe a little more aggressive with how they are just personally. I'm not talking like physically.
Yeah.
But like they usually go get it. And I'm not saying Shohei Ohtani is a great baseball player. I'm sure he is. Mm-hmm. But all that stuff. But he seems so nice and so kind and caring and giving. And that's not the average sports better. I'm not saying they're like unempathetic or anything like that, but they're generally like ravenous.
Big sports better. You
mean. And passionate. Yes. And I'm sure Ohtani's passionate, but like he's so calm and cool and collected all the time and so sweet.
I know.
Nothing about him says, I love gambling big money sports.
It doesn't. It really just doesn't. But it is what it is. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm interested to see what happens, but I kind of don't think he was that involved in this. I really don't.
No, I don't.
I think it's people don't understand how easy it is for just the wrong person to get in the circle and be able to have as much power as they do over a person, over someone's personal accounts and life. Because when you're an athlete, you delegate most of your personal life to other people to handle.
And I wonder if like maybe Shohei Ohtani got wind of this. He's like, no, that's my friend, and I trust him with my life. There's no way. And kept him on for a little while longer. Meanwhile, he's still stealing his money.
Yeah, that too. All right. With that, Jesse, NFL rule change.
Oh, boy. We had a couple. Actually, another one even dropped this morning.
Yes.
So we had four rule changes in the last couple days. You know, two of them kind of whatever. One of them the coach is challenging. Mm-hmm. So you have two challenges, and it normally would be, if you hit both challenges, you get a third challenge. You can make a third challenge. Now it's just going to be if you hit one of the challenges, you'll get the third challenge. So, like, okay, that's not a big deal. The other one, it has to do with penalties and, like, changes of possession. If there's, like, offsetting penalties or, like, if an offensive – there's, like, a major offensive penalty before they change of possession, they'll enforce that now and stuff like that. It's a little, that one's a little more confusing, whatever. The new kickoff rule was announced today. It looks terrible.
I know.
I'm curious to see how that one's going. I know, like, more and more they've been trying to get rid of kickoffs and all that stuff for injuries and whatnot. And then the big one that everyone's talking about, and again, has to do with trying to cut down on injuries as we move closer to flag and touch football. Mm-hmm. They banned the hip drop tackle. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know what that is, it's basically when the defender wraps him up at the waist, the ball carrier at the waist, mm-hmm. and just kind of, like, tries to drop him and fall with him. Mm-hmm. And this happens like every other play. This mm-hmm. is like every other tackle, basically. Mm-hmm. And I get it. There's been an uptick in high ankle sprains and Achilles snapping. So they want to save people's ankles and legs. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should do it at the expense of now everyone is the only choice you have left. Is to just put the crown of your helmet right into that guy's knee.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem.
And so you're going to save Achilles at the expense of ACLs and MCLs.
I think that's a part of this. The other thing, I mean, the NFL, the defense, the coaches, they can bitch and whine. The league doesn't care. The league cares about the TV product. The league cares about scoring. offense because that's what's good for the league. I don't think that's the wrong way to think. It certainly makes games more entertaining. About offense being down last year, some kind of made, especially early in the year, it kind of was, there was some ugly football last year.
Listen, this is the Patriots.
The bigger problem is that's just kind of one of the ways to tackle people. And when you're bang, bang, trying to tackle someone, you can't think about what it looks like, how it's going to look. And yeah. Like, what do I need to do to do
I need
a penalty?
I need to stop this man.
But you know what? The other part that's awful for television product is penalties.
Yeah.
Penalties. They're awful for the television product.
It slows the game down.
So if half the time guys are getting tackled now, we're going to be 15-yard penalties, and I'm going to have to sit there like, oh, this drive continues even though it doesn't deserve to be. That's not good for the television product either.
No.
I understand the league's point on this. I understand what they're trying to do. I think it's going to be detrimental because what they don't realize is just how many more penalties are now going to happen in the game, which is already a sticking point that fans were bitching about last year. So I kind of don't think this is going to be good to the league. I think it's going to be bad.
No, I don't think it is either. Mm-hmm. And again, I get it. The idea is they want to keep the players safer because, you know, more injuries, these guys can stay on the field and make more money for them. Because in theory, the people that get injured first are the superstars because they're the ones up front. They're the ones playing
I'm
every day.
I'm not interested in if it's fair or not for the defense because I know the league doesn't care about that. So therefore, there's no point in me talking about it. It's just simply, I think you're going to see a really big uptick in even more penalties. And at the end of the day, that's detrimental for the consumer and the TV product.
But the way to then get those penalties down is you have to go for the knee.
Yeah, there's that too.
And you're going to blow out a bunch of knees.
Yeah.
Like, it's like when they first took away shots to the head. Mm-hmm. You can't hit the guy up high. ACL injuries went up.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, players learned, all right, I'm going to start trying to wrap them at the hips and the waist to avoid that injury. But now here we are again. You can't even do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I get it. You want to save these players. You want them on the field because you think that'll make you money. But the product itself is going to suffer because there'll be like how many penalties? Like that's so many penalties.
I know. And penalties are one of the most frustrating, if not the most frustrating part about watching a football game.
How many are
so annoying.
How many plays do you think we're going to see next year where a guy goes to like maybe wrap him up at the shoulders, and how many times like he can't quite get him, so he slides down.
Yeah.
Now he knows he's wrapping him by the waist. I'm taking a penalty. I'm just going to let him go, and then he gets another 10, 15 yards. Because he's like, I don't want to take the penalty.
Maybe. I think more likely they're just going to tackle him anyway and the penalty's going to get through. The idea that you can be able to think about that in that quick
time. There's been times. Like with sometimes like a defender's going to tackle the quarterback. And he feels like, I'm tackling him wrong. I got to let him go. And he lets him go.
There's been a few times, but I don't know. A lot of time, at least when you're tackling a quarterback, it's in the backfield. It's a little less bang bang. It's a little bit less like. I don't know. There's just a difference when a guy in the moment is rushing forward for a first down. I don't know. There's less time to think. It's more,
I guess,
more important. It's more bang bang. It's more imperative. I just.
You know. Well, I mean, as this goes on, people get used. I can't go over the hips. And they'll get in the head. Like, all right, instinctively, I can't go over the hips. Mm-hmm. And if they feel like they are, I gotta let them go. And maybe we give up a big play. It's like, all right. I let him go, and he got 25 extra yards. I should have just took the penalty.
Yeah, probably. I don't know how it's all going to work out, but I do think for sure I will put money on you will see a significant uptick in penalties per game, and that is just awful for the product. So,
do you think the kickoff's going to last?
No. I don't know.
Here's the thing. I think they'll try it 1 year, and then they're going to change it again.
They might. I didn't go as in-depth thinking about the kickoff rule, though, I'll be honest, because they're already – They've screwed with the kickoff so much, it's kind of stupid already. So, like, it's not as big a deal.
To be honest,
I think this hip drop tackle is going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, if you told me 2/3 of the way into the season, the league is just like, yeah, this is a disaster, we have to change the rule, I wouldn't be shocked. Because I do think you're going to see that much of an uptick in penalties.
That'd be breaking the rules to change the rules. Because technically, they're not allowed to do that.
I mean,
I realize it's the NFL, it's their league, they can do what they want.
They did that with the catch rule.
What catch rule?
The year of that famous Steelers Patriots regular season game.
What was his name?
Jesse James?
Yes.
Yeah. That year, come playoff time, they changed the catch rule.
They did the offseason, I thought.
They officially did it in the offseason. No. They officially changed it in the offseason, but you could tell by the way the officials were calling stuff in the playoffs that they were like, they made the call. They were like, actually, we got to stop this.
I remember Seahawks Super Bowl, Patriots Seahawks Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Remember how they beat the Ravens with those weird, like the eligible, ineligible stuff? Like, yeah. Shane Vereen will go to the line and say, I'm ineligible. And then, like, that makes a lineman eligible to go out for a pass. And they're like, why did we cover this? In between the AFC or the championship week and the Super Bowl, I remember they changed that rule. They're like, you have to announce.
Yeah, so this idea that the NFL is not doesn't change.
But I know it's their rules
during the year. They do it all the time. They've done it
multiple
times.
I wouldn't call it all the time. But they've done it in the past.
They've done it multiple times.
And technically they're not supposed to, but it is their league, so it's their effing rules.
Yes. The NFL is the most adaptive sport of all of them.
The NFL broke the NFL's rules. It's the NFL's rules.
I know. So, yeah. All right. With that, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, we'll touch on the Jets and Aaron a little bit and finish up with our Darwin Award. Stick with us, guys.
All right, let's talk Jets. You know, I saw an article this morning, actually, when I was just looking up some stuff about him. Robert Saleh welcomes the quiet offseason they've had. And I kind of don't even think it's that quiet.
It really hasn't been.
Like, compared to last year, I get it. Like, the Jets got Aaron Rodgers up in lights. But, like, the Jets compared to last year, like, that was good. You got a big quarterback, big making headlines like that. Look at the Jets go. And this offseason, it's been Robert Saleh doesn't want to go to the combine or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's what comes out. Aaron Rodgers is going to be the VP for RFK. So, like, I don't know what you want, Jets. Like, what headlines do you want? You think you want this quiet?
Yeah.
Your quarterback's going to run for president or VP, whatever? Okay. All right, anyway. But, like, they did make some moves recently. Actually helped the team.
I do think they were good moves.
Yeah. So, they brought in Mike Williams, good wide receiver, formerly of the Los Angeles Chargers, and Tyron Smith, formerly of the Dallas Cowboys. And, like, these are good moves. The problem is, I still think this group here, with Aaron Rodgers being on the Jets, these young core guys that have all been very loud, Breece Hall, Sauce Gardner,
Garrett
Wilson was the other one. I don't know, man.
I know.
Again, good moves. Two good moves in these past couple weeks. And yet, I cannot still think, but like giggle to myself, like, oh, it's going to be that much worse when you jet this up. Because Aaron Rodgers is still 40?
Yeah.
Is he 40 now?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't care. Like, he had a great recovery and an incredible surgery with his Achilles. He's 40, going off of that. I still have questions about, like, how well will you actually protect this guy? One man isn't going to change everything. One really good wide receiver who can get those 50-50 balls isn't going to matter if Aaron Rodgers run for his life. And again, the culture here is really one of the biggest problems that plagues the Jets.
Oh, yeah.
Year in and year out. And Robert Saleh, we've praised him a little bit for actually like getting these guys to rah-rah and buy into things when they probably shouldn't.
And his defense has still stayed pretty good most.
Sure, sure. But I kind of think Robert Saleh, especially being not a veteran coach, it's kind of reached the end of getting these guys to buy in if it's not actually working. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work out the gate, I mean, I can see Aaron Rodgers being like, yeah, maybe I will be a politician. Mm-hmm. I could see, you know, these young guys like Wilson, Sauce Gardner, and Breece Hall being like, I don't know if I want to be a Jet in the long run, son.
Yeah, like, get me out of here.
And then if it doesn't work, again, your little quarterback experiment failed. Tyron Smith has only got a one-year deal. Mm-hmm. He'll probably be like, oh, that was a great deal. Thanks, guys. This place is a mess. Mm-hmm. So, again, good moves. But, like, come on. These are the Jets.
Well, the other problem is, yes, they're good moves because they needed to do something at both of the positions. But the problem is they're both guys that get injured a ton. And Tyron Smith is really – I mean, look at the numbers when he played and when he didn't play for the Cowboys. He's a difference maker.
Sure.
But the problem is – if he only plays 8 games, that's not enough. Like, for this to be good enough to be what they need, he's got to play 12 to 14, in my opinion, at minimum. If he's playing 9, the O-line's a disaster, and they don't win enough games, and they miss the playoffs, in my opinion. Same with, I mean, not to the same extent as Mike Williams, because you can survive without a wideout.
Yeah.
But they need more than 3 games out of him, 4 games out of him. And what has he, on average, been playing? 6 or 7? in a season.
I don't know.
Like, at least with the Chargers, they had a little bit more depth to deal with that. Like, the Jets don't. When Williams is gone, they have one wide receiver, really. And with Aaron, 40 years old, Achilles injury, he's not Lamar Jackson running, but movement has always been actually a very big part of this game. He moves even when he's in the pocket a ton, bouncing around. He gets out and extends plays to make throws. Movement has always been a massive part of Rodgers' game. The reason why, like, I'm less about fading Kirk is because Kirk has always been stationary. Three-step, drop, in rhythm of the offense, get the ball where it needs to be. I run the offense efficiently and do what I'm told. Aaron is a freelancer. Aaron makes the play go longer. Aaron holds the ball. Like, it's just not, they don't have the same game, and therefore I think Kirk off an Achilles injury is not as big a deal as Aaron's is. So,
Well, Aaron's
throw away the fact that the O-line is still a suspect.
Aaron is also older.
Yes, that too. So, I think there are two moves that make me think that there's a chance they could be better than I thought they would be a couple of weeks ago, but I still think this has a high chance of being a disaster. Now, at least they get to be in a division that's probably on the downswing. I mean, Buffalo lost a lot of guys. I think the Bills will be fine because of the division stinks. I still think they're winning the division. But they're going to have a lot more holes. I think the Dolphins have problems. I think the Patriots are going to be one of the worst teams in football. So because the division is so bad, it may bail them out that this isn't the total disaster that I originally thought it could be. But I don't know. If you told me this team ended up going 6-11, I also wouldn't be shocked there either. Aaron's got the dynamics of the building too are so bad.
Like, yeah.
If it doesn't start good right away, it's going to go completely off the rails because Robert Saleh doesn't have enough power in that building. Aaron's got way too much power in the building. So I also think it's just so funny. Aaron talking a couple of weeks ago, we need to get back to football. Okay, Aaron, you're the one of the biggest reasons that it's not about football half the time.
Yeah.
And I do think, I thought maybe the president story, the VP thing, it was very Green Bay-ish. Like when he dropped the, like, I'm going to be the host of whatever. Like it's a power play to be like, what are you doing? You need to get something done here in free agency. We're not good enough. So I understand if that was what the motive was, but it's still just adding on top of a distracted building with just cultural problems. So I think it was a good move. But I think this team is headed for disaster still.
Apparently, Aaron Rodgers first heard about him being in the VP conversation when he was rolling face on ayahuasca. That's what I heard.
Oh, really?
That's what, yeah.
So, Aaron continuing to make things not football-related, too. The other thing that needs to be addressed last year and this year is still the problem. Nathaniel Hackett is not a good coach. And I always say, you know, just because you're a bad head coach could mean you're a good coordinator. I think he's proved he's not a good coordinator either. He's just had Aaron. Mecole Hardman, what he said after leaving the building was pretty damning. Like, Hackett doesn't have any power. Aaron basically just runs the offense. Like, they hired someone solely just because he was friends with Rodgers, not because he was a good hire. And I think you saw that last year with them trying to run their offense. And if Aaron even takes a minor step back from what he was, well, when your offensive personnel isn't deep and your coordinator sucks, then if Aaron's not Superman level good, you're not going to be good.
So, how does he do this?
I don't know.
How does Aaron just talk all these people being like, me, give me the power, let me do that, I got to.
I don't know how. I have no idea.
Because, like, I've seen these clips of him on Pat Mac and all this stuff. Like, I don't know. He comes off, and we're critical of him, but I'm not trying to be him when I say this. He comes off as a little bit of a douchebag. Mm-hmm. So I've never seen like an actual douchebag like use their charisma to like get everyone to buy in. Usually people are like, he's just a douchebag. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know. Everyone's just so willing. Like, you know what, Aaron? Have all of that. What do you want? What do you need?
I don't know what it is. He just throws such a pretty ball.
It's the thing. He's not the most talented guy I've ever seen either. He's talented. He's a very good football quarterback. Very good. But, like, I've seen better at everything. I've seen more accurate. I've seen a stronger arm. I've seen a more movement. I've seen a smarter pre-snap read and all this stuff. He's good at everything. And I get that. But I've seen better in everything, and Even Brady was not. I mean, I guess maybe the Bucks.
Aaron does throw a pretty ball, though. He do.
I'm not saying he doesn't.
I know.
But, like, I don't care how good the ball he's throwing. Like, why are you the coach now?
I know. I don't understand.
Why are you the GM now?
Because
he throws it so well. Because, he runs the contracts.
Because in Green Bay, they didn't have an owner. So power dynamics a lot of times are a little off. And then he went to a desperate franchise in the Jets. Who were so desperate for anything that they'll just be like, oh, yes. He's that dude.
he sees weak people and be like, I can.
Yes. No, he's that dude. He really is.
Mm.
I don't want to say weak people because it makes him sound more malicious than he is.
Sure.
But he's just
the
someone,
Jets deserve it.
He just certainly. Yes, they do. He's just someone who needs and seeks power. So he goes to places where he can have it. Now, he was drafted in Green Bay. I understand that. But that's probably part of the reason why he stayed for so long.
Well, maybe Green Bay.
And then it's part of why he selected to go to the Jets and not the Steelers or, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Where he said a lot of nice things about Tomlin, but at the end of the day, he knew he'd go to Pittsburgh and the media's rough. Mike Tomlin ain't going to take any crap. They got a history of winning. The front office has power. The owner has power and the GM has power. He ain't going to just bulldoze his way through. He ain't going to get to Pittsburgh and say, sign Randall Cobb, sign Alan Lazard. Like, they're going to be like, no. We draft wide receiver amazing. Why the hell would we spend on some C-level old dude?
Yeah, those aren't locker room cancers.
Yeah, right? So that's what it is. He's one of those dudes. And, I'm not saying it makes him a bad person, but it's certainly not good from a football standpoint.
I mean, no, I don't think he literally, like, looked the Jets up and down and be like, yeah, I can get some fame and fortune off these people. Mm-hmm. I think it was, he saw an opportunity to go somewhere else that wasn't Green Bay because I definitely think he wanted him down to Green Bay. And he's like,
but
the Jets will look good because I can weasel some things out of this.
But let's not act like there weren't other suitors. Why did he pick the Jets?
Yeah.
Could have gone to the Steelers. There was talk they were interested. There were other places that were interested. The Titans were interested.
I wonder if Bill ever was interested.
But
Bill Belichick.
You ain't going to bulldoze over Mike Vrabel. I don't think Aaron was because I don't think he wanted to play in the exact place that Tom did.
Well, I'm just saying I wonder if Bill was interested because it was rumored that Bill loved Aaron Rodgers for a long time.
I mean, if you're Belichick, why wouldn't you be interested? I just think there was no chance
Aaron
was going to want to play.
At this point, you know he's cancer and you know he's going to try to.
I guess. Maybe. I think Bill probably thought, in Bill's mind, I think, it's like.
I could see Bill being like, I could spec this guy into.
Yeah, I actually think
he's wrong.
And
but
I don't know if he is, because I do think Aaron, if he respects you enough, probably would chill out a little bit. But it's just he doesn't go to a place that happens.
Yeah.
And he was never going to go to where Brady played. He just wasn't going to do that. So that's my thing on that. Anyway, we're going to finish up now. Drum roll, please, for this week's Darwin Award winner. This week's Darwin Award winner is John Calipari and the Kentucky Wildcats for once again getting bounced in the early rounds of the tournament by a 14 seed this time in, I think it was the Oakland Grizzlies.
Yeah.
Who, by the way,
so close to picking
Oakland aren't even from California. They're from Michigan. It's Oakland, Michigan. Yeah. You didn't even know that was a place.
No.
I didn't know that was a place either. I assumed it was California.
I found out right now.
Yeah, I assumed it was California. No, it's Oakland, Michigan.
with that plumber that, hit all the threes.
Wildcats, John Calipari. You continue to get bounced in the early rounds. John Calipari wants to sit there. John has officially, I feel like, become a swindler and a grifter at this point when he talks about this guy. He'll acknowledge the problems for a short amount of time, and then he'll just go right back. Well, this loss doesn't define the season. I got two kids who are going to make the NBA. It's like, okay.
Great.
Are you a minor league team, John? Is this baseball? Is that all that matters to you? Have we reduced Kentucky basketball to just, we feed the NBA some guys? That's what Kentucky basketball is now. One of the 3 to 4 best programs from the start of college basketball. That's all you are now? That's what you've made it? That's all you care about, John? Then he's like, the kids. You got to think about the poor kids. I'm telling you, their success. This one game doesn't define. First off, John, the kids are going to be fine. They come to your program to play 1 year and then go to the NBA. They're going to make millions of dollars. The kids are fine, John. And second, yes, it does define the season because you're the goddamn Kentucky Wildcats. You're the ceiling isn't making the tournament for you. You're supposed to be in Elite Eights, in Final Four. And John, while you coach there, you probably should win at least one title at some point. So congratulations. Oh, you got something to say?
I was going to say, you also lost to a used car salesman.
Yeah, you lost to a college in a town that I didn't know existed.
Yeah.
I did not know there was an Oakland, Michigan.
Yeah, and that one kid that looks 30.
I know. And it's like, John, maybe at some point you should change something. Maybe you should stop caring about just talent and stop just doing one and done and realize that maybe you need to do a little bit of both. And the talking after is just so funny.
I think you need to change the school colors.
It doesn't define our season.
I'm sick of confusing you with Duke.
Yeah, there's that too.
From a distance.
They don't play in the same conference, at least.
But, like, I see them from a distance. I'm like, that's a Duke uniform. I was like, oh, it's Duke.
Well,
sorry.
There's a very easy, it's very easy to tell them apart now, though.
One is actually, no, Duke's not playing anymore, right?
No, they're still playing.
Oh, they are?
Okay. Yeah. Duke wins games and Kentucky doesn't, at least in the tournament.
Yeah.
So if you're watching a basketball game in March and you see blue and white and you don't know which one it is, if they're winning, it's Duke. If they're not, it's Kentucky. If you look up at that score and they're playing some school called Oakland and they're not winning by 25.
It's not California.
It's probably not Duke. So congratulations to John Calipari and the Kentucky Wildcats, this week's Darwin Award winner. That has been it for Slow Your Roll. We will see you all next week, probably talking a little bit more like NFL draft time as we lead up to that later in April and that kind of conversation. So have a great rest of your week.